This is Yola Tenga, the CFRC 101.9, Queen's University in Canada.
Well, thank you very much. We're very glad to be here tonight.
Hi, this is Ira from Yola Tenga. You're listening to CFRC 101.9, Queen's University in Kingston, the birthplace of reggae. What's the matter? Why don't you listen?
Good evening. It's Thursday, January 8th, 2004. Tonight?
I don't see a lot of efforts by what we call mainstream or commercial radio to be inviting or inclusive or representative of diverse communities, including queer communities. We are not looking to be middle of the road or to be reflecting the status quo. We're looking to challenge and to open up new types of discussion.
We're here. We're queer. Get used to listening. A look at diversity-oriented programming on campus and community radio. Plus, Rainbow Kenya is now online. I'll talk with the site's creator about the need for queer-positive media in Africa. And on Sexpertise, a recent study shows that 66% of grade 7 students in Canada believe that HIV/AIDS is curable. What you need to know about how high-risk youth perceive the severity of this pandemic. From CFRC, Radio Queen's University at Kingston, Ontario, Canada, this is Queer Radio, helping to create a more queer positive and inclusive world, one show at a time. Good evening, everyone. I'm Michael Dick. Well, after much hype and anticipation, Queer Radio is finally here. Queer Radio is all one word, and it's spelled with only one R, by the way. I know that might take some getting used to. Nevertheless, the point is, we are making a bit of history tonight on CFRC as we add distinctively queer programming to the station's lineup, something that has only been done a handful of times before. One of the slogans we use on this show is entertaining, enlightening, empowering, and I like to think that we will offer a little bit each week while managing to appeal to virtually any listener's taste. Indeed, we're entertaining in some of the fun segments we'll run, and in some of the music we'll eventually introduce over the next few shows. We're enlightening in our content by attempting to be an informative and reliable source for news affecting the queer and queer-positive communities, as well as a look at local events. And, of course, we'll be empowering in an endless number of ways, from our mere presence on the airwaves to our web content, to the variety of guests and variety of topics we'll deal with, and, of course, through the activism that comes as a part of simply being yourself, only now we're taking it to the air. I hope for and encourage listeners of diverse backgrounds. Certainly, we're here to appeal to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, and otherwise queer communities, but we're also here to be a haven for those straight, but not narrow, where they can get accurate information on queer issues in a positive environment. Suffice to say, Queer Radio will offer something for everyone, from those comfortably out and about with their sexuality to those attempting to come to terms with who they are, perhaps listening through the privacy of headphones in the hope that we can provide an escape to a world more positive than what they may be facing alone. I would like to point out at this time that Queer Radio is not limited to the radio. In fact, we have a website too. Check us out online at www.queerradio.ca. In the very near future, the site will offer information about our shows and our program, archives of past material, and links to helpful resources for those in all stages of the coming out process. If you have any suggestions or comments for us at Queer Radio, I would encourage you to send us an email shout-out at this address, shoutout@queerradio.ca. We have a lot of great shows planned for the future, so the best way to avoid missing out on all that we have to offer is to simply tune in each week. Additionally, you are invited to join our Friends of Queer Radio mailing list for members-only updates and a sneak peek at upcoming shows. Instructions for doing this are available on our website. Music segments will also be a regular feature on Queer Radio. Tonight, however, we're jam-packed with some creative magazine-style content which you're sure to enjoy. First, we're going to hear the news from This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio news magazine. Thanks again for your continued support and listenership, and welcome to Queer Radio.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 2 weeks ending January 3, 2004. Argentina's parliament, the Chamber of Deputies, has voted to amend the national anti-discrimination law to make sexual orientation and gender identity or its expression protected categories. The law defines as discriminatory acts and omissions motivated by these and 18 other reasons. The national gay and lesbian civil rights group called CHA, Comunidad Homosexual Argentina, led almost two decades of lobbying to win the early December vote, which it called an historic step in the recognition of the rights of gay, lesbian, transgender, transsexual, bisexual people in the entire nation.
Sexual orientation-based discrimination is now prohibited in employment by the executive branch of the U.S. state of Michigan under an executive order Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm issued on Christmas Eve. About 55,000 state civil service jobs are covered by the order. The national group Human Rights Campaign says that only 10 other U.S. states have adopted similar employment policies.
In South Korea, the Seoul High Court has issued a ruling against the nation's first gay website, X-Zone. Yet the decision itself is supportive of gays and lesbians' constitutional rights to free expression and the pursuit of happiness. The government's Information and Communications Ethics Committee, which censors the internet in South Korea, had designated X-Zone as harmful to minors, and X-Zone was asking the court to override the ruling. The judge apparently did not really have that choice, since there was no higher court precedent on enforcing the anti-gay clause of the so-called youth protection law governing internet censorship. But while finding against X-Zone, the judge suggested that the law may violate the constitutional rights of gays and lesbians and expressed doubts as to its listing of homosexuality among acts of perversion. The government's own sex education guidelines for teachers already recognize homosexuality as a human lifestyle and a form of affection.
Indonesia's first film clearly showing a gay kiss has not only escaped government censorship, it's become a box office hit, and it may even be opening some viewers' minds in the Muslim-dominated nation. The film is called Arisan, meaning a popular Indonesian tradition of friends and family meeting on a regular basis to gamble and socialize, and it satirizes Jakarta's super-rich elite. The three lead characters are two married women struggling with infidelity and their gay friend, Sakti, who is struggling with his orientation. As well as his passionate smooch with a new partner, the film includes an aerial shot of gay oral sex in a public bathroom.
Australia's first registered partnerships were contracted on the first business day of 2004 in Tasmania. Tasmanian partnerships are open not only to same-gender couples, but to a broad range of state residents in relationships the new law calls significant and caring. Registry carries essentially all the state-level legal rights and responsibilities of marriage, as the term partner has now replaced husband, wife, and de facto in numerous Tasmanian laws. The biggest exception is the ability to adopt an unrelated child as a couple, although partners can co-adopt each other's children. The first to register were Michael Carnes and Bob Lavis of Bruny Island, who've been together for 17 years. The first lesbians were Lee Highland and Beck Whelans of Launceston, a couple of 5 years standing who plan to have children by artificial insemination. Hobart couple of 2 years, Jason Kemp and Mark White, along with Highland and Whelans and veteran activist Rodney Croom, together ceremonially cut a cake decorated with a rainbow and the word equal.
Church weddings for gays and lesbians will be held by the three largest Protestant denominations in the Netherlands, which was the first nation in the world to open legal marriage to same-gender couples. The synods of the Dutch Reformed Church, the Calvinist Reformist Church, and the Lutheran Church have voted to merge those denominations into the Protestant Church of the Netherlands, effective in May. The united body will permit same-gender weddings, although no individual church will be required to perform them. Roman Catholics outnumber Protestants by about 2-1 in the Netherlands.
Pope John Paul II continued the Vatican's global campaign against legal recognition of same-gender couples on the first Sunday of 2004, attributing that growing movement to what he called a misunderstood sense of rights. He reaffirmed that heterosexual marriage is sacred, calling it a human and divine gift, and said, "It is necessary that at every level the efforts of those who believe in the importance of the family based on matrimony unite."
But more than a score of Roman Catholic priests in the Chicago area took issue with their church's homophobia in a joint open letter to the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church. They declared themselves increasingly disturbed with the increase in the use of violent and abusive language in church documents relating to homosexuality, language they labeled not only pastorally destructive, but vile and toxic. They called for not only an immediate end to such language, but asked that all those in official positions of teaching authority in the church refrain from any more statements directed at the gay and lesbian members of the body of Christ, and instead begin an earnest dialogue with those same members. Pledging themselves to extend respect and dignity to all, they wrote, "We join the countless men and women, heterosexual and homosexual, who seek justice, mercy, and compassion in and through the Catholic Church."
China's first trans man this week became the nation's first transsexual to legally marry there. According to government sources, the trans man known as A Gang married a woman known as Xiao Li in the city of Chengdu. The couple had been living together for 3 years, but they could not officially marry until after A Gang underwent sex reassignment surgery in May and received a revised identity card. A Gang told the Chengdu Commercial Daily, "All these years I've yearned for love, but never imagined I would taste it. And when I finally met Xiao Li, I didn't dare to think about marriage. I'm lost for words now that I've finally fulfilled both my wishes."
And finally, the changing of the year is the season of awards, and Lesbi-Gays have been among the honorees. South African veteran gay activist Zaki Ahmad and a group he chairs, Treatment Action Campaign, were both formally nominated for the 2004 Nobel Peace Prize by the U.S.-based American Friends Service Committee for what it called a significant contribution to the global struggle against AIDS.
Nigeria's first lesbi-gay and trans group, Alliance Rights Nigeria, was honored by the National Group Journalists Against AIDS with a Breaker of Silence Award at its late December Red Ribbon Awards ceremony.
The Paris-based World Association of Newspapers awarded its annual Golden Pen of Freedom to openly gay Uzbek journalist Ruslan Sharipov, who remains imprisoned on a sodomy conviction widely believed to have been designed to silence his criticism of the government. Calling for his release, the group said, "The award recognizes Mr. Sharipov's outstanding defense and promotion of press freedom in the face of constant physical danger, prison, and censorship. His refusal to censor himself, even in the face of intimidation, prison, and torture, is a courageous act that is an inspiration to journalists and human rights everywhere."
The U.S. Religion Newswriters Association named as its Religion Newsmaker of the Year Gene Robinson, the first openly partnered gay to be consecrated as a bishop by the Episcopal Church USA and a source of controversy throughout the global Anglican Communion.
Time Magazine's 2003 Canadian Newsmaker of the Year was actually a gay male couple, Michael Leshner and Michael Stark of Toronto, who capped their years of activism for equal marriage rights by becoming the first same-gender couple in the nation to receive a legal marriage license following an historic ruling by the Ontario Court of Appeal.
There were three entries of interest on Queen Elizabeth's New Year's Honours list for the UK. Openly gay police inspector Paul Cahill, chair of the UK-wide Gay Police Association, becomes a member of the British Empire for services to diversity within the police and to the wider gay community in London. Bisexual film and stage director Stephen Daldry, whose work includes Billy Elliot and The Hours, already had his MBE, but is now elevated to Commander of the British Empire. One of Scotland's newest MBEs is Anna Patrizio, the mother of a gay son who was honored for her work with Parents Enquiry Scotland, a helpline for parents of lesbi-gay children.
Also on the New Year's Honours list, the newest members of the New Zealand Order of Merit are openly lesbian entertainers the Top Twins, Linda and Jules. Along with becoming successful on television and about 25 years of activism for gay and lesbian equality, they've also worked against apartheid and nuclear weapons and for Maori land rights.
And with Italy's New Year's Honours list, President Carlo Azeglio Ciampi conferred one of the nation's highest honours on a hero who had been considered one of its lowest citizens. The Medaglia d'Oro al Merito Civile goes to a homeless gay cross-dresser who turned 57 on Christmas Eve, a birth date that gave him the first name Natale, an Italian equivalent of Noel. In mid-December, Natale Maria intervened to stop two young men who were attacking and robbing a group of young women. Others heard their screams and saw what was happening, but took no action. Maria remains in a coma from the beating the men gave him, but his sacrifice gave the women the chance to escape. They notified police, leading to the arrest of the men, who will be charged with attempted murder for their attack on Maria. There's hope that Maria will regain consciousness, and when he does, he'll no longer have to sleep in the streets of Rome. Mayor Walter Veltroni left by his hospital bed the keys to a city-owned flat.
That's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending January 3rd, 2004, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
A show like Queer Radio is certainly a welcome addition to a programming lineup for a campus and community radio station. Never before have we seen such a presence of queer positive programming on the air and in print. But with this, of course, comes an influx of anti-queer or queer-negative sentiments. But does campus and community radio have a distinct mandate to broadcast diversity programming, or is this dependent upon each particular station's needs and goals? To help answer this question, and to get an inside look at some of radio's ideologies, I enlisted the help and wisdom of Sarah Miller, programming manager extraordinaire at CFRC. Good evening, Sarah. How are
Good
you?
Good evening. Wow, that's quite the compliment, Michael. Well, I'm blushing.
I'm a very nice guy. You know how excited we are about the show here
yeah,
tonight.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It's been a long-awaited addition to our schedule, so it's nice to finally be able to say we are on the air.
Thank you. Now, I wonder if you could just describe for our listeners first what your background is in campus and community radio.
In campus and community radio, it's actually quite limited, and I feel a little bit like this job came to me by fluke. I'll tell you about my background in radio. I think I went about it backwards. I started out doing an internship at CBC Radio in Winnipeg. That also was a bit of a fluke. I happened to just have a connection and did a little bit of work, and they always need help over the summer, and so managed to land myself some summer employment at the big mother corporation, the CBC. Did another summer the year after, and then from there came to Kingston for school. Got involved here at CFRC only, I guess, about a year and a half ago now. So really, I'm as much of a newbie to campus and community radio as you or anyone else around here. Well, yeah, compared to some of our volunteers. So I came here as a volunteer. I do a show Monday nights called Groundswell, and this job opened up in September. And so I applied for it. I'm totally dedicated to campus community radio, something I'm really interested in getting involved in at a deeper level. So that sums up the experience right there.
Definitely. Now, I wanted to ask about diversity-oriented programming. You know, it's certainly becoming more and more prominent across all forms of media today. I'm sure most of our listeners would agree. What sorts of efforts do you see in your everyday life and experience of the media trying to be more inclusive towards queer people in particular?
I don't see a lot of efforts by what we call mainstream or commercial radio to be right. inviting or inclusive or representative of diverse communities, including queer communities. What I do see from that whole area of media programming is token gestures. So shows that, you know, present themselves, and this is not across the board,
right.
but for the most part shows, both radio, although I don't even know very many mainstream radio shows.
I don't think there are many, no.
No, but anyways, shows that have a gay or lesbian or queer character and present themselves as queer positive, but when you actually look at the structure and the values and the messages in the show, they're not moving away from your average, you know, heteronormative kind of structure or messages. So that's what I see coming from there. Where I'm really excited and what I find really just a really positive thing is just as you mentioned, movements towards diversity and programming in underground media or alternative media, such as, I mean, campus and community radio
of course,
is one
yeah.
venue for that, but there are others, zines, websites, print media, just basically people who have said, I'm not finding what I need, I'm not able to contribute to mainstream media or to the conventional avenues for representation, so I'm going to create those avenues myself or with a collective or, you know, So that's what I think is happening more and more, and that's where I think campus and community radio fits in.
So it's almost like in the mainstream media, when you see a show with a queer character on it, it's more a gesture of tokenism in many cases. It's not necessarily a show that's specifically focused on the ideas. Rather, it's more an issue of, well, do you think they're doing it because they can say, well, you know, you can't accuse us of not trying to outreach because, look, we have a gay character or a lesbian character or bi or whatever? Or is it an issue of they're really trying to move forward and it's a baby step?
I don't know if it's useful to make the distinction. I think it depends on particular shows and the people doing the work. What I really care about, or what I think is most useful to talk about, is just the overall structure. Like, what are we getting from these shows? Who's able to contribute them? What are they saying? What is being left out? So if it's basically, you know, and I have to be honest, I don't watch a lot of television, so I know that that's where a lot of shows are popping up that feature queer characters or queer themes.
Right.
So I can't comment so much on television, but it's more, you know, are they following the same tired storylines? You know, instead of boy meets girl and falls in love and lives happily ever after, is it just boy meets boy or girl meets girl? You know what I mean?
So yeah,
I'm not seeing a lot of really bending the norms and bending the rules around telling stories.
Right. Now it seems like, you know, campus community radio, it almost seems like it has a specific responsibility to be a centered media outlet, or even a left-of-center outlet. I'm not sure how you would make that distinction. Is this really something that is required of campus community radio, or do you even agree with that statement that campus community radio is supposed to be left-of-center?
I don't know that I would say campus community media is supposed to be left-of-center. I would say campus and community media is supposed to be a venue for all kinds of political discussions and debates and ideas, political, social, cultural, artistic.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a responsibility to open up that space. Now, what we have right now is a mainstream media that is very, very conservative, that is very, very corporate in its ownership and in its
right.
mandates.
Mm-hmm.
I do call that, you know, a right-wing media. So if calling for media diversity and for open media venues is left of center, which I suppose it is, then sure, let's call it that. At the same time, I don't want people to have the impression that
you
have to be a lefty.
No.
You know, but certainly we are not looking to be middle of the road or to be reflecting the status quo. We're looking to challenge and, again, to open up new types of discussions and meeting between different people.
Right. Now, it seems like, for example, the CBC, for example, it's almost like, you know, the campus community radio is trying to be, like, in Canada, of course, much like the CBC, in that it's very centered in its programming as much as possible, with a specific mandate. And I would think also, like, the U.S. Or any other country's public outlets, such as NPR or PBS, is that sort of the lines that we're going on?
No, I have to disagree with you there. I often give mixed messages, I think, when I talk to people about
right.
the kind of radio we're trying to do. I often look to the CBC for sometimes stylistic guidelines and so on, but I don't want us to be the CBC. We
right.
can't be the CBC.
No,
We don't
not.
Want to be the CBC.
No.
So does that answer your question?
Yeah,
I guess I'm challenging the idea that we're trying to just be a more local or grassroots or low-budget
right.
copy.
We're trying to have a similar mandate, in other words, but we're not going to be the CBC. Is it?
I don't think the CBC is fulfilling its mandate for
okay.
programming diversity or for inclusiveness or for reflecting the broad based variety of you know, Canadians'
right.
values or involvements or ideas and so on. So while it, I'm sure, strives to be as inclusive and diverse as possible, it's a very large and centralized organization that deals
mm-hmm.
with all the challenges that those types of organizations face around budgeting and advertising
yeah.
and reaching out to people. And in some ways, campus and community radio struggles with inclusivity and diversity because we're generally small stations with limited budgets. But at the same time, we're often in a better position because we're so local and because anybody can, who has any interest in radio, who has something to say, who has music that they want to hear that isn't being heard anywhere else, they can walk in here and get involved. And that's not something that you can say of other, of the CBC, and certainly not of commercial media.
Certainly. Now, what do you hope to see in future from programs like Queer Radio or other such diversity-oriented programming that CFRC or any other campus community station decides to launch?
Well, I would certainly encourage any community or person who wants to reach out to a community to get involved, to contact us. Excuse me. I also... I'd like to see that expanded upon, but I'd also like to see these stations, or sorry, these programs, kind of function as, again, meeting places or little mini forums on their own. So where we can sort of do some networking and reach out and bring different segments of our community together. And make the station and make our town a more vibrant and interesting place to be.
Hopefully we'll be doing that with Queer Radio and any other show that CFRC decides to launch, I would think. Last question for you, Sarah. It's a fun one. Describe your ideal media empire to me. Let's say you had a media empire. What would you see in your empire?
I feel like I have a bit of an empire going here. I have more power in this place than I've ever held before. Mm-hmm. But that said, I'm against the idea of a media empire.
I mean,
that's what we have right now.
Exactly.
We have media that's controlled by a very, very small group of people and a very select group of people. And that's what I want to see undone, or that's where I see, again, the role of alternative media, including campus community radio. It's part of dismantling that empire, not replacing it with a different type of empire, but getting rid of the empire model of media altogether.
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying there. And lastly, you co-host a show, with Leslie Elliott on CFRC. Would you like to tell us a bit about that show,
Sarah? Personal plug. I'm going to do two personal plugs.
Definitely.
One for Groundswell, which is on Mondays 6 to 7. We're looking for volunteers. Mm-hmm. We want to run like a collective, so have as many people contributing as possible. I'll call it sort of an all-encompassing news and current affairs show focusing on politics, labor issues, the environment, social justice. So if anybody is interested in contributing to that in any way, then you can call us at the station. I'm sure you'll give the numbers and all that later on.
Oh, definitely.
The other thing is that this is going to be airing Thursday night. That means that, well, this is Thursday night since we're,
of course,
quote-unquote live.
That's right.
So this is Thursday night, and that means that people have one day to get in their volunteer applications for the next round of volunteer training here at CFRC. You can pick up applications here, basement of Carruthers Hall. Just come in. There's a stack of them on your right-hand side. And if you have any questions or concerns, call us. There's still open slots. There'll be slots opening up later on in the year. So if radio is something that you're interested in doing, then this is the place to do it.
Definitely. It's an excellent place to volunteer. I can tell you that one firsthand, and would certainly encourage everyone to come on out and give radio a shot. Why not? Really nothing to lose.
That's right.
We really appreciate all the work that you and your colleagues do at the station, of course. Sarah Miller, Programming Manager here at CFRC, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Queer Radio.
Thanks for having me.
The evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program. Saddam Hussein has held numerous meetings with Iraqi nuclear scientists, a group he calls his nuclear mujahideen, his nuclear holy warriors, facing clear evidence of peril.
Are you tired of political doublespeak and half-truths? Then the Groundswell Radio Collective wants you to help with story ideas, research, production, and on-air work. Groundswell is a weekly hour-long program heard on Monday nights from 6 to 7 right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. The program focuses on local and international social justice issues, anti-poverty struggles, the environment, labor, and much more. Groundswell Radio, a different kind of embedded reporting, bringing you stories not heard elsewhere, striving for something a little closer to truth.
my fellow citizens, the United States of America has the sovereign authority to use weapons of mass destruction against anyone, including the Iraqi people. The United States of America has a history of reckless aggression.
Call 533-2121 or email groundswell@riseup.net to get involved.
Trained and harbored terrorists, including operatives of Al-Qaeda. The United States of America has already used weapons of mass destruction.
This is your signal. CFRC is currently accepting volunteer applications for our winter orientation and on-air training sessions. No radio experience necessary. Applications can be picked up at the station, located in the basement of Carruthers Hall on Queen's University campus. The deadline is January 9th. Non-students and students who will be in Kingston over the summer are welcome and encouraged to apply. Call 533-2121 for more information or visit our website at www.cfrc.ca.
Howard Johnson Hotel at 237 Ontario Street beside the Lone Star Cafe. Students and visiting parents get our $72 rate. Howard Johnson, Queens and Kingston's number one hotel. Signatures, hair, aesthetics, and tanning, giving you a progressive, expressive, and impressive look and style. Look for Signatures in the JDUC at Queen's University, or see your Yellow Pages under Beauty. Medical Arts Pharmacy, offering you free delivery and fast and professional service. They care about your health. Located at 800 Princess Street, open 7 days a week.
Frontenac Cycle, specializing in mountain, road, and hybrid bikes, offering quality service and sales to the community for over 30 years. Frontenac Cycle, at 397 Princess Street, in the Hub.
The opposite of courage in our society is conformity. And there you have the trouble today. It's conformity. People acting like everyone else, without knowing why, without knowing where they're going.
Kids! Come in, kids. Come in, kids.
Get involved in the music of your age. Listen to Counter Rotation Fridays from 8 until 10.
It's here at last, the new two-way wrist radio that keeps you in constant touch with your buddies.
Listen to Counter Rotation Fridays from 8 until 10. Your campus and community radio station, CFRC.
It's got what it takes to help you be a leader in your gang.
If you were to do a search for the words queer and Kenya on the web, you wouldn't have been likely to get many results, at least until early December, when a new website titled Rainbow Kenya took its place as the only online resource specifically for queer Kenyans. To most of us in the Western world, the launch of a new queer-themed website is certainly not the event it once was, given that queer identities are becoming more and more prevalent across all forms of media. But for others elsewhere in the world, the situation is much different, and the World Wide Web may be one of the only means available to connect with queer identity and culture. For some further insight on this topic, I'm joined now by Indigo, creator and webmaster of the Rainbow Kenya website. Due to privacy concerns, we've withheld the webmaster's personal information. Good evening, how are you?
Hi, Mike. How's it going? I'm fine.
Not too bad, thanks. So, I wanted to ask you first, what are you trying to accomplish through your website, and what is it that makes it unique?
Well, Rainbow Kenya is intended as a safe way for queer Kenyans to foster a sense of identity in a country where, you know, homosexuality is illegal. It was created because through all my years in Kenya, I realized that there was really no space to communicate with other fellow queer Kenyans without risking, you know, getting caught by the law or being punished at some point. And, well, obviously, in Kenya, you cannot meet out in the open. That would be a huge risk. So I thought the internet would be a really good way to communicate with people, a really safe way as well.
Now, this is the only site, excuse me, that is currently online for queer Kenyans?
Yes, it is. I realized that when I first plugged in the search, you know, queer in Kenya, GLBT in Kenya, and there was really nothing out there. And so I'm like, hey, you know, I might as well do this.
Now let's talk about the need for having queer positive media outlets like your site available to and geared towards queer Kenyans. How dire is the situation, if I may ask?
Well, you can sort of imagine living your life in a really claustrophobic environment where all you feel is fear and loneliness. Day in and day out, you feel like there's no one around you that can understand who you are and what you're feeling, and no one's going to understand you, and even if you did talk about it, you'd pretty much get into really big trouble. So I realized that I really needed to find a way to get in touch with other GLBT Kenyans, and so I tried to actively search out members of the gay community. And we found a small group, and through them, I realized that they would have a good response to a queer website. The situation is pretty dire because homosexuality is illegal in Kenya. The criminal code expressly prohibits homosexual practices and provides a really stiff punishment. It's about the maximum of 14 years, and sometimes it includes capital punishment, which is, you know, a couple of lashes of the whip. At present, though, the law is really unclear about lesbianism. See, homosexuality is illegal. Now, you can say lesbianism isn't because it doesn't exist. There is no word for it. So it's a pretty tough situation. The former president of Kenya, his name was President Daniel Arap Moi. He was really big on homophobic comments. I remember lots of times where he would make really, really homophobic comments like, Kenya has no room or time for homosexuals and lesbians. It is a Western concept, and Africa does not need them here, and so on and so forth. You can see what I mean.
So is Kenya one of the few nations that's left in the world that does put such a criminal penalty on these practices? Do you know?
Kenya, unfortunately, is not the only country in the world that has such stiff punishments with regards to homosexuality. You have to remember that this is Africa, and homosexuality is still very much viewed as a Western concept, something that the white men brought to Kenya. It's something that has to be eradicated in order to reclaim the sense of, you know, pure Africa. I know that South Africa has a huge GLBT population, and they're doing fairly well there. They're very established, and they have a strong presence. Other than that, there are not many other countries that are really out there.
You know, I mean, I won't get into a nature-nurture debate. We'll save that for another show. But I think that, you know, one of the things that I've heard is, well, and it's a theory that I personally subscribe to as well, how can it necessarily be a choice? Because why would people choose to be queer in countries such as Kenya that are obviously so against this and punish it so severely? And I don't know if you have heard that ideology before. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Well, obviously, if I'm living in a place where I've never heard of homosexuality before, it doesn't exist, there's no word to describe it, you know, it's completely foreign, and all of a sudden, you're starting to realize that you're getting these very odd feelings. In fact, you might as well call them queer, very queer feelings. And you realize that there's nothing to describe you. There is no language to describe who you are and what you're feeling. It's completely foreign. No one would choose to live a life like that.
So that then is certainly one of the goals of your website, is to help people who are otherwise completely not exposed to queer culture, and to help kind of allow them to get more comfortable with themselves, and to even, as you said, on the most rudimentary levels, to help them figure out who they are and accept themselves.
At the basic level, what I wanted to do is to let queer Kenyans foster a sense of identity, a place where they can cross cultural barriers, especially cultural barriers.
definitely. Now, I wanted to ask about the feedback that you've gotten so far about the site. Have you received a lot of positive feedback, or are you expecting any negative feedback, or has any of that come your way just yet?
Right now, I'm really very thankful for all of the support that I've gotten from people out there. I receive emails almost every single day from people who are simply looking for places to go in Kenya, from expats who are simply asking, where can I go hang out? Where can I find other people to hang out with, like-minded individuals? I also receive emails from people around the world who happen to end up on the site, and they basically applaud the efforts that I'm making. I do expect negative reactions. I mean, it's inevitable, especially if the local papers start to report about this, and there will be some sort of negative feedback, and I do anticipate that, but I'm ready for it.
What would you do to help combat any negative feedback? Do you know right now? Have you given that any thought?
Well, I'm crossing every bridge as I come to it, but right now, I mean, the obvious thing to do would be to educate, and educate.
That seems like a really universal solution, I suppose. It seems to cure a lot of things without question. Now, I just wanted to ask as well, you know, what message do you want to leave with our largely North American audience here about the experience of being queer in Kenya versus what one would expect in the West, either from your personal experience or just from your observation as you prepare the website?
Well, I realize that most people here don't realize how fortunate they are. I feel that you should stop now and then, you know, just take a moment and start thinking about how fortunate you are to be in a place where you are respected, where there are laws in place protecting you. Don't take your freedom for granted. I mean, not many people have that opportunity. That's about it.
Do you expect the situation in Kenya to change anytime soon, politically? Realistically, I suppose, in your honest opinion?
Realistically, I'm just one person with a very small website. If there were other people out there who'd want to join forces, so to speak, and work and form some sort of alliance or an activist group, then maybe. But realistically right now, I'm just hoping to, you know, just break the fire a bit, get people to start thinking about things, and hopefully things will change. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I think that coming across sites like yours, it makes us feel fortunate to be in the West, you're right, I think we do take a lot of things for granted. You know, certainly throughout the West, the issue of same-sex marriage is certainly a hot topic, but of course, in nations such as Kenya, I mean, the issue of just existing as a queer person seems to be something that is even up for debate, it seems. It's almost hard to believe. But politically, the climate is still very... Is it inhospitable, or is it, is it really... Will people bash in the streets or something along those lines? I mean, they do in the West, of course, but is it something that's certainly allowed and even encouraged?
The thing with queer people in Kenya is they're still very much in the closet. It's really hard to tell who's queer and, you know, obviously who's not queer, because people just don't want to show it. They don't want to express it. There isn't any so-called, you know, bashing, because you can't just walk along the streets and pick someone out at random. However, there's a lot of really, really mean gossip. And as a result of gossip, yeah, people will feel some sort of negative backlash toward them. It's inhospitable in terms of laws. Just the fact that it's illegal to be yourself. I mean, that's saying pretty much a lot, you know. Aside from that, the Constitution was supposed to address gay rights. It's still illegal. I mean, they did do a constitutional review, and they brought women's rights on the agenda. And, well, personally, I feel that until women's rights are dealt with, you can't even move on to gay rights. You just have to move on in little steps.
So just finally, Indigo, I wanted to ask about any future plans that you might have for your website.
Well, at the moment, Rainbow Kenya is addressing constitutional issues concerning LGBT rights. I also want to address the rate at which HIV is being transmitted, because there's a lot of people out there who don't know about safer sex information. Aside from that, I'm starting at the very basic level, just letting people know about really simple things like the existence of the flag, what certain symbols mean, information on entertainment, literature, global GLBT events, so that they know that they're not like stranded on this island, you know, that there's a whole other world out there with all these people like them. I think that's just so comforting. In the near future, however, I want to set up a forum where people can discuss issues affecting them. There's been a calling for this already. I receive emails from people saying, you know, please let me get in touch with other queer people, or I'm a lesbian looking to meet other lesbians. Is there a way that we can start, you know, to communicate with each other over the internet? Can we set up a discussion board? So, yeah, I do want to set up some sort of a forum where it'll be heavily, well, as heavily protected as I can make it. So there will be a security feature, but I'm still trying to deal with that right now.
Well, Indigo, it's obviously been very inspiring to you, to talk to you, with you tonight, and it's certainly something that I think all of our listeners very much appreciate. I just wanted to ask if there's anything else that you'd like to add about your site or Kenya or anything else.
Well, I'd like to ask everyone to stop by the site when they have some time and show that they're out there and that they're listening.
For sure. And the address for Indigo's site, Rainbow Kenya, is www.geocities.com/RainbowKenyaGLBT. That's all one word, and it's all lowercase. And if you want to contact Indigo by email, the email address is RainbowKenyaGLBT, again, all lowercase, all one word, at yahoo.ca. Indigo, creator and webmaster of Rainbow Kenya, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight on Queer Radio, and all the best to you in your future endeavors.
Thanks, Mike.
And now it's time for Rainbow Connection, Queer Radio's calendar of queer positive events serving the communities of Eastern Ontario and Northern New York State. This week's calendar is brought to you by KarenGoldberg.com, life and small business coaching for the queer and not-so-queer community. Visit KarenGoldberg.com today for details. That Choir, comprised of approximately 150 women, directed by Georgette Fry, is performing on Sunday, January 11th at 7:30 p.m. at the fully accessible Sydenham Street United Church on 82 Sydenham Street. The choir's repertoire includes blues, jazz, pop, folk, and gospel. Tickets are $10 and are available at Brian's Record Option, Terra Foods, Renaissance Music, and Novel Idea. For more information, call 547-2779. Queer salsa lessons will be happening on Friday, January 16th from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the J-Duck in Wallace Hall at Queen's University. Admission is $2 and no dance partner is required. Lessons will also happen on Friday, January 30th from 7 to 8 p.m. at the J-Duck in the Sutherland Room. Admission is also $2. For more information, call 548-0687. Attention, Queen's instructors! The Queen's Positive Space Committee is offering an information session for Queen's instructors on Wednesday, January 21st from noon till 2 o'clock. To register for the session, just complete the application on the Queen's Positive Space website. Although this session is geared to instructors, non-teaching staff and students are also welcome to attend. Fame, glamour, a lot of rainbow ribbons. Okay, it's only January, but Kingston's Pride Committee has already started meeting and needs your help. Get involved by coming to an organizing meeting on Tuesday, January 27th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the HARS office, 844A Princess Street, just up the street from Pam's Flower Garden. This committee organizes the dance, the parade, and coordinates the Pride Guide. At this point, there are only a few volunteers, so your help is really needed. If you're interested in attending but need a ride, call John or Marnie at 545-3698. Also from the Pride Committee, take a break from this frozen wasteland and start to plan your summer Pride event. April will be here before you know it, and the Kingston Pride Committee wants to put your event in the Pride Guide. But they need the details by mid-April, so why not start now to avoid the spring rush? Information about your event can be emailed to John Den, J-O-H-N-D-E-N, at kingston.net. That's this week's edition of Rainbow Connection. Be sure to email your nonprofit organization's queer positive event details to calendar at queerradio.ca. And now it's time for our favorite part of the night. This is Sexpertise. And joining me today is Jessica Kundapur. How are you tonight, Jessica?
Good. How are you? Is it really your favorite part of the night, Michael? That makes me so happy.
It makes me I'm incredibly ecstatic to have you here in studio with me.
Oh, now, thank you.
you know, the thing about this expertise segment on Queer Radio is it's not that this is anything distinctively queer necessarily. It's just that, you know, we're obviously, you know, we're a pro-sex show, and therefore I think it's important that we use this as a forum to get across very important sexual health information that people really need to know about. That's why you're here. And Jessica is a sexpert with the Sexual Health Resource Center at Queen's University. And we're talking tonight, Jessica, I believe, about a study that was recently done that measured the public, or specifically youth, and their knowledge about HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. What were some of the results about the study that I find very startling, actually?
Yeah, the results were really, really distressing, actually. The study was published in 2003, last year, and it was the Canadian Youth Sexual Health and HIV Studies. And it was actually researched by professors at Queen's, Alberta, and Laval universities. And here's some of the crazy stuff that it surveyed. It surveyed grade 7, 9, and 11 students across Canada. Over 11,000 students were studied. And it turns out that they reported that 66% of grade 7 students and 50% of grade 9 students didn't know that there was no cure for HIV/AIDS, which was absolutely incredible, because current literature suggests, and pretty much every scientist will tell you, that there is no cure for HIV and AIDS. So it was pretty distressing that a lot of these students thought that the disease was curable.
Why do you think that young people are maybe feeling that way? Do you know what it is? Is it media? Is it a lack of education? Or
it's really hard to tell. I'm not too sure why that happened. The study also reported that less students surveyed in 2002 received HIV and AIDS information from the media, mainly television, which is unusual, because a lot of times I think people think that the media gives people the wrong idea or the wrong information about infections or public health. But it turns out maybe that's not necessarily true. Maybe more public awareness through the media might be beneficial for young people.
I'm sorry, are we talking public service announcement campaigns, or just shows in general that will deal with the subject?
I think anything is good. Yeah. I think anything that we're putting on media that accurately reflects what's going on in terms of health issues is a good thing. And because I think maybe teenagers are really receptive to that and pick up the right information. What was interesting about this study was that even though there is so much media out there, students that were surveyed in 2002 knew less information than students surveyed in a similar survey in 1989. Another sort of statistics reported by the survey was that 49% of grade 11 students believe that there was a vaccine for HIV/AIDS.
Really?
Which is not true.
No, of course not.
There are, you know, vaccines and drugs being developed right now. They're in the clinical trials only. But for some reason, teenagers have this idea.
Now, of course, I mean, this would be a good time to make the statement that, I mean, this is not anything that's specifically queer, as I believe I said before. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is certainly not to stereotype, and this is not to say that HIV/AIDS is some sort of a gay disease.
It's
Which is an unfortunate stereotype. But, I mean, it certainly is something that affects both the queer and straight community, so therefore it is important to be bringing these statistics up on the show.
For sure.
Now, do you think perhaps that, I mean, obviously they didn't do any study specifically asking for people to self-identify their sexual orientation. A lot of these students were younger too, so